Sporty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We start today's show in the city of Cleveland, Ohio. Now, back in June, as you might remember, the Cleveland Cavaliers, led by LeBron James, won the National Basketball Association championship. And that championship wasn't just the first ever for the Cleveland Cavaliers, it was the first for the city of Cleveland in 52 years, the longest amount of time between championship titles for any U.S. city with professional sports teams. Now, flash forward from June to today, and Cleveland could be on the verge of going from no sports championships in 52 years to two in the same year. That's because last night, the Cleveland Indians beat the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball's American League Championship Series.
Two balls, two strikes. Here it comes. In the air. Foul territory. The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series.
And as you heard there in that final call, by beating the Blue Jays and winning the American League championship, the Cleveland Indians have secured their spot in this year's World Series championship. It's the first time Cleveland's going to the World Series since 1997, and if they win, it'll be the Cleveland Indians' first World Series title since 1948, a 67-year drought. But if you think 67 years is bad, just look at the Chicago Cubs. They're currently playing the Los Angeles Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. And while the Dodgers last won a World Series in 1988, the Cubs haven't won a World Series title since 1908. That's right, the Cubs have gone 108 years without winning a World Series championship. The bottom line here, that there's not just a championship on the line at this year's World Series, there's the potential to end some of the longest title droughts in U.S. sports. So good luck to the Cleveland Indians, Los Angeles Dodgers, and Chicago Cubs as they continue to fight for that historic World Series title. Well, it's been a big year for sports in Cleveland, but it's also been a big year for sports across the United States. That's because this past summer at the Rio Olympics, the U.S. led all countries by winning 121 medals, including 46 gold. And one of those 46 gold medals was won by Helen Maroulis, who made history by becoming the first American to win gold in women's wrestling. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen as Sunny talks with Helen Maroulis about her impressive and record-breaking career, including her big Olympic milestone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If we look back to August 18th, a historic moment for USA Wrestling, you won the first ever gold medal for the United States in women's wrestling. How has your life changed since that moment?
Well, I'm not on a diet anymore, so that's one way it's changed. But no, it's definitely different now. I went from extreme training to like extreme, I guess I'd call it extreme vacation, running around in media and going to lots of professional sports games and interviews, and it's been such a blast.
I did check out your Facebook page, Helen, and I saw a photo of you with the baseball great Cal Ripken. I guess that was one of your sporting events that you mentioned. And you said you kind of picked his brain for tips on maintaining a competitive edge. What did Cal give you any good pointers?
Yeah, Cal is, I mean, from the brief couple, minutes I got to pick his brain about it, I'm like, you can tell he's been so successful for a reason. He just seems so smart. I wanted to keep asking questions and questions. But I just asked him a little bit about, like, the balancing, you know, training and competing with media obligations or wanting to be in the public eye and give back and have time for that while at the same time prioritizing training. Because for myself, the deal that I made with myself is that nothing will compare to a gold medal these 4 years. And these 4 years, I'm going to give myself to sacrifice everything. So I said no to a lot of camps and clinics, and I felt bad about that a lot of times because I'm like, man, I really want to give back, and I know it'd be great to go to these camps and clinics for girls' programs, but at the same time, I just saw if I spread myself too thin, you know, and I don't achieve this goal, it's not going to be worth it. Whereas if I just, you know, go 100 miles an hour and dedicate myself to this goal and then I have a gold medal, then these next 4 years I can give more of myself and a lot more time to reaching out to young kids and young girls and everything. And so obviously I plan to wrestle for the next 4 years, and I do want it to be different than it was the last four. I do want to be available more for those young girls and to inspire them and just to promote wrestling to begin with. So I just asked Kale, I'm like, for someone to have been in the sport for so many years, I'm like, how did you, you know, balance all of that? And it was really interesting to hear his response.
Helen, you talk about being an inspiration for young girls, and I look at that Team USA Olympic team, and you were definitely one of the stars. Simone Biles, she earned headlines. Katie Ledecky. I think more than half the team was made up of female athletes. Did it feel like a special team in that regard?
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to meet them, actually. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, Katie Ledecky did the Nationals game the night before I did. And so I'm like, man, but it's just been so awesome. And to see where they are in the media and what they're doing and to just put female in athletics, you know, on the map and to really, you know, show girls that you can do anything. And it's like funny, you have, you know, what is, I think Simone is 4'9 or 4'10 and this jack little girl, and then Katie Ledecky's tall. And so it's like really cool to just see, just to show girls that, you know, that you can do whatever. You can choose any sport from gymnastics to wrestling to swimming, and it's been really awesome.
Can you take our Voice of America listeners back to that medal ceremony in Rio? How did you feel when you had the gold medal placed around your neck?
Oh, it was, wow. It was surreal. It was very emotional. It's like everything that you work for, and it's been my dream for 17 years. Many times you don't see any payback for the investments that you make, but getting that gold medal, to me, I'm like, everything was worth it. You know, the times I didn't succeed, all the sacrifices that I had to make, and then just being reminded of my family and everything that they've done and sacrificed for me and my coaches, and I'm receiving this medal, and it's like all of us, this group effort. So it's awesome.
In the final, you beat Japan's Saori Yoshida 4-1, and I was reading some of the reports. You really showed a lot of respect to Yoshida. You know, you said you were honored to wrestle her. Many say she's the greatest female wrestler of all time. What are your thoughts on Yoshida?
Oh, my gosh. She's an incredible, incredible athlete, and yeah, I mean, it really was an honor to wrestle her. I just remember thinking, you know, I'm like, just don't retire before I get to wrestle you. Not to prove anything or anything like that, but it's like, here's this legend in the sport. And I'm like, if I don't get to wrestle her, it's just going to be, you know, she's, you know, in history for being one of the greatest wrestlers for all of time. And, like, it's just so cool to be wrestling in the same time while she's still competing. And so I'm like, I've always wanted that opportunity to wrestle her once more, and especially with all the scouting and everything that I did. I know I almost lost to North Korea, and I just thought, man, I spent so many hours focusing on Yoshida. If I don't get to wrestle her, this is going to just feel terrible. So I really wanted to, I just wanted the honor to compete with her. And I do think, I mean, she's so respectful. And after I won in 2015, you know, we won at different weights, and she came up to me the next day and shook my hand. And at the 2014 World Cup, you know, I got to talk to her a little bit at the banquet, and it's just one of those things. She's so nice to everyone, whether you're in her weight class or not in her weight class, and it's just like, how can you not respect somebody like that?
You talk about scouting Yoshida. I read another report that said you even studied some of her videos in Japanese to try to get inside her head. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't learn Japanese. I translated some of her interviews because, you know, she only wrestled at the World Championships, so she's pretty much wrestling, you know, once a year. And I'm like, that's just not enough to be able to study someone and the techniques that they're doing. And so, you know, I went back even from 2004 when she wrestled, and it was like, okay, I see she's winning. Her techniques are changing. So what is it that keeps her consistently winning? And that had to be the mental part. So I'm like, I need to figure out how she thinks. And so I just translated some interviews, and I'm sure now somebody can figure out how I think from the amount of talking that I've done. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It helps give you insight into somebody.
Yoshida from Japan, and Japan will host the 2020 Olympics. I guess we'll see you in Tokyo.
Well, you know, I plan to obviously go for Tokyo, but I don't want to be in the mindset that that's my spot. You know, that I have it locked, because I don't. I have to earn it. There's a lot of nationals and trials and world championships to fight for. So I definitely want to go for 2020. But, you know, got to take it one step at a time.
Helen, I think you said this whole build-up to Rio was a 17-year process, or is that how long you've been wrestling?
Yeah, 17 years.
Talk about the early days wrestling. I mean, you know, women's wrestling is not widely followed in the United States. Did you get some negative criticism when you first started?
Oh, yeah. When I started wrestling, you know, it was maybe one other girl in the state of Maryland that wrestled, and I grew up wrestling boys, and a lot of times they didn't like that. So there were a lot of times coaches would try and make me quit, or they would, you know, kind of just put guys against me and say, okay, just kind of beat her up until she doesn't come back. And it wasn't that I was, you know, some super tough girl and put my foot down and, you know, nobody can stop me. It wasn't even like that. It was just, man, I really love this. I'm getting beat up, but I still really love this sport, so I'm just going to come back tomorrow. And I'm like, eventually I'll probably get beat up until I start getting better. So I guess I'll learn from this. And but, you know, people come around, and I think part of it is just it seems taboo to people, or they don't know my reasons or intentions. But when they see that I love the sport and that, you know, I have a dream with it and that I work hard, people change their approach.
That's Olympic champion wrestler Helen Maroulis of the United States of America speaking with our Sunny Young from her birthplace of Rockville, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, D.C., filling in for Sunny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on The Sunny Side of Sports right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Well, as we talked about just before that break, Helen Maroulis is best known for her incredible athletic abilities. But that's not always the case in sports. Sometimes athletes aren't known just for their play, but also their personality. Case in point, Australian tennis star Nick Kyrgios, the number 14 ranked male tennis player in the world. Now, we first reported last week that Kyrgios received a $16,500 fine and an 8-week ban from tennis for throwing a match and arguing with fans during the Shanghai Masters. Now, this week, Kyrgios is making headlines again because he's announced that he's skipping a tournament in the Netherlands next year so that he can play in the National Basketball Association's Celebrity All-Star Game. You know, Kyrgios' decision to trade the tennis court for a basketball court isn't sitting well with some fans and sports observers who say that Kyrgios' actions in Shanghai, along with this announcement, show that he's not motivated to succeed in tennis. But at least one big name isn't giving up on Kyrgios just yet. American tennis legend Jimmy Connors. Connors, the former world number one and 8-time Grand Slam title winner, tweeted out late Wednesday, quote, "Kyrgios, you want to be the best? Come see me. You'll learn to play, excite, and to win. It's your choice, or just be mediocre. Good luck." No word yet if Kyrgios has accepted the coaching offer. And in just a few short months, Africa's best football teams will face off in Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations. But yesterday, Hicham El Amran, Secretary General of the Confederation of African Football, revealed the draw for AFCON 2017. Group A, which will play in Libreville, features Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Guinea-Bissau, and hosts Gabon. In Group B are Algeria, Senegal, Tunisia, and Zimbabwe, and they'll play in Franceville. Playing in OIM in Group C are Cote d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of Congo, Morocco, and Togo. And finally, rounding out the tournament in Group D, Egypt, Ghana, Mali, and Uganda will face off in Port-Gentil. Group play will begin on January 14, 2017, with host Gabon taking on Guinea-Bissau in the first match of the tournament, and the finals are set for February 5, 2017, at the Stade de l'Amitié in Gabon's capital, Libreville. So mark your calendars for that final, February 5, 2017. Well, joining me now in the studio is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard, who's here to talk about the latest trends in the sports world. Sporty greetings, Doug.
Sporty greetings, Andrew. Good to see you here.
Good to see you. I understand you're going to try to do something I try to do with varying degrees of success on the show, which is touch on three different sports leagues here in the U.S. with trending stories about each.
Let's see if I can do this. No pressure. All right. Well, let's begin. I know that you've already updated the audience on what's happening in Major League Baseball. Of course, the Cleveland Indians have won the pennant in the American League, and it's still a very hot contest over in the National League. The Chicago Cubs and the Los Angeles Dodgers are tied up at 2-2 after a fairly decisive win last night by the Cubs. I think that's what a lot of people were doing to enjoy themselves, perhaps, rather than watching the debates. Now, I'm sure, as you've mentioned as well, you know, we have the potential here of, again, the potential. There are three possible teams. But if it comes down to the Cubs and the Indians, it's been 108 years since the Cubs have won a World Series. It's been 68 years since the Indians have done likewise. Now, the Indians have been a little bit more contenders. They've won the pennant more recently, twice in the 90s. And both teams at this point still showing a good game, I think. But, of course, Cubs fans, and there are millions of them, just cannot deal with the possibility of winning. I think they're just absolutely beside themselves. So looking on social media, it is filling up with Cubs fans who are kind of, you know, it's just lots of angst. You'd think there'd be a lot more celebration. These are people, just a few famous people, perhaps may surprise you. So Bob Newhart, you may remember him, old comedian. Sorry, I shouldn't say old on Twitter. He wrote, "I'm a Cub fan, and I say that because it kind of prepared me in life. You knew you were ahead, and you knew you were going to blow it somehow." That kind of sums up, I think, what a lot of Cubs fans are thinking and feeling. George Will, the columnist and author, quote, "My friends became Cardinal fans, and I grew up cheerful and liberal, and I, for reasons I don't understand, became a Cubs fan." So there again, a little bit, they could, I think, use a little, I don't know, something extra in their coffee in the morning. And finally, novelist Sarah Paretsky, quote, on Twitter, quote, "I thought I'd protected myself emotionally, but I realized this morning I am already in mourning." That despite the Cubs having won last night. So
they're already preparing to lose. It's, you know, after 108 years, they don't remember what winning's even like.
No, they don't. And it came close. You may remember back some years ago at the so-called Bartman incident, where a overeager fan reached out, caught a ball he should not have, really just blew Chicago Chicago's chances. So it seems that all Chicago Cubs fans are expecting the same thing at this point. Let's switch gears just a little bit. I know for a number of weeks, you and Sonny have been talking about Colin Kaepernick and his protest. This is his silent protest. He takes a knee during the playing of the national anthem at the NFL games. It's 9 weeks. This has been going on. And also think about a few other things that have happened recently. Tom Brady is only really back in the game for a few weeks after serving a 4-week suspension, a much litigated suspension over the so-called Deflategate, which soured, I think, a lot of people, at least New England fans. And of course, now just last Sunday, you may have missed this, I was watching this, the Washington Redskins, Vern Davis, he caught his first touchdown pass in 2 years. And really, and I think, you know, helped the Skins go 7-up over their opponent, now over the Eagles. And you would think, well, that would be a great thing. He must have been happy. So Davis did like this little jump shot, just kind of out of happiness, kind of took the ball and kind of, you know, like you might if you were playing basketball. It's very innocent. Immediately he was dinged by the refs. It cost the Washington team 15 yards. Now, all of this is leading a bunch of people on Twitter and social media, other social media, to complain that the NFL stands for the No Fun League. Here's just a few comments. Joshua Capeman, the NFL has become really become the No Fun League. It's a shame. Who cares about celebrations, really? Let's see. Roger Goodell, NFL trying to drop in ratings. And he, Brad DeMata says back, well, maybe if it wasn't called the No Fun League, the ratings would be better. the ratings are down, down 11%. You may have mentioned this. Viewership is down 11% from last year levels, and owners are starting to get worried. Here's just two of them recently meeting in Dallas. The Colts owner Jim Irsay said, quote, when the lights go on, we are entertainment. We are being paid to put on a show. There are other places to express yourself. And then Texas owner Texans owner Bob McNair chimed in, quote, people come to the game because they want to get away from what's happening in their everyday lives. And again, this is one of these examples of it seems that the league may be increasingly out of touch with the fans, and now the owners are chipping in too, saying, look, if we don't do something, if we don't get rid of this reputation, viewership may continue to slide, and that's going to hurt our bottom line, which is something they don't want, given the billions of dollars that are at stake here.
Well, that's the thing. It's when the fans chime in or the players chime in, it's one thing. But when the people who own the teams who have that money behind them chime in, then that's, you know, when they start to get the attention. And it, we have talked about this on the show with as far as social media, you know, NFL partnering with them to try to get more audience because the TV ratings are declining.
Right.
We'll see if they continue to decline or if maybe they find a new life on social media or if they can fix some of these problems.
Exactly. And if the owners and the NFL can kind of reach agreement as to what needs to be done utilizing these other channels, utilizing social media and maybe the cable cutters as well. Finally, I know only a few minutes, but I am going to meet your challenge today over at 538.com. That's a website that many people are checking. It's a data-driven prediction website, many people looking at it because politics is their key area, but they also do sports. And there is a brilliant piece I'm just going to call people's attention to. It's by Neil Payne, and it's the title is Meet the Man Behind the NHL's Russian Revolution. The gist of the story is that not that long ago, in the 80s, 95% of NHL players were either Americans or Canadians. It is very, very much not that way these days. The American style of play was always kind of clunky, kind of dump and chase, not very artistic, while the European and particularly the Russian style of play was much more a finesse game, really more kind of, you know, puck control down in the net. And so one guy, Mike Smith, who apparently, let me pull this up, Mike Smith, this is back in the 80s. Mike Smith was a general manager for the Winnipeg Jets. He held a doctorate in Russian studies. He'd never played professional hockey, and he decided what's going to change the NHL is Russian players. He tried it with the Jets. It didn't work. He went to the Detroit Red Wings. He tried it there, and it worked like a champ. And the rest, as they say, is history. The NHL now really an equal partner in Russian, European, Canadian, and American players.
Well, I'm going to give you credit for four because you mentioned that jump shot celebration of the football. So that's four sports. We'll count basketball. So thank you so much, Doug Bernard, for joining me talking about the trending topics. That wraps up our October 20th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, our VOA engineer Nick Ivanov, and thank all of you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, recently sanctioned two individuals, Gabriel Amisi Kumba and John Numbi, following increasing indications that the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, continues to suppress political opposition in the country, often through violent means. Specifically, on September 28th, the United States designated John Numbi for engaging in actions or policies that undermine democratic processes or institutions in the DRC, and Gabriel Amisi Kumba for being the leader of an armed group that has threatened the peace, security, or stability of the DRC. These steps reflect the United States' continued commitment to disrupt this destructive behavior and foster a better and more stable future for the DRC and the Congolese people. As a result of these actions, all of the designated individuals' assets within U.S. jurisdiction are frozen, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. In announcing these designations, John Smith, acting OFAC director, stated, "These current and former Democratic Republic of the Congo government officials have engaged in actions that undermine democratic processes in the DRC and repress the political rights and freedoms of the Congolese people, risking further and more widespread instability in the DRC and the broader Great Lakes region. This action is not directed against the people of the DRC. It is intended to alter the behavior of the targeted individuals." DRC state agents have reportedly continued to violate the human rights and fundamental freedoms of people in the DRC, including through the use of excessive force in response to political demonstrations. Most recently, large-scale demonstrations in Kinshasa on September 19th and 20th, in response to delays in the announcement of elections, erupted into violent clashes, resulting in fatalities between demonstrators and security forces in Kinshasa and elsewhere in the country. There were reports of lethal use of force by DRC state agents in response to the recent demonstrations, as well as violent criminal acts committed by individuals in Kinshasa. The violence of September 19th and 20th underscores the need for an inclusive dialogue process on an electoral timetable to ensure a peaceful and democratic transfer of power. The United States continues to call on all stakeholders to refrain from violence. In this respect, we would stress that the government and its security forces have an obligation to respect and ensure human rights, and we would note that violence will hinder, not enhance, the prospects for an inclusive dialogue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 1730 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates? and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be. Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.